in our series is right mindfulness. Now, right mindfulness is basically what we talk about all the time, hopefully. Mindfulness is the, you know, we're a mindfulness sitting group, a vipassana sitting group, and mindfulness is the central practice, both to the kind of Buddhism that we do here and to the Theravada tradition in general. And some of you have been listening to talks by me and other teachers on mindfulness for a long time. One of the things that I like about mindfulness a lot is that in doing mindfulness practice and in paying attention to carefully to our experience, in the world of our direct experience, the only authority is ourselves. And that hopefully the mindfulness practice is a practice where we learn to become, in a sense, authority for our own spiritual life, and we can make our decisions for ourselves. So in that spirit, perhaps, I thought this evening that I would turn the tables on you a little bit. And rather than me going on telling you, me as the expert, telling you what mindfulness is, I thought it would be nice for you to tell me. Tell the group. And I think that each person has a different answer. There's not like a right or wrong answer. But what is those of you who've been practicing for a while and been coming, what does mindfulness mean for you? How do you understand it? And how has it helped you in your life? How has it functioned in your life? How do you apply it? Have a great Quaker silence until someone's inspired to speak. Elaine.
I found it as giving you space inside my head in several different ways. One is space with respect to time. That my automatic responses are still there, but it's as though there's some space in between the cause and the response. And this is enough space to give me an opportunity to react a little differently or to remember to be mindful or just pay attention to the response. Another kind of space is though there's more to me in some way. That there's as much going in and through kind of a black hole as there is out there in an infinite universe. I hesitate to put it in terms of the concept itself, but I'm afraid it is anyway. it's just bigger. So that, again, there's space with respect to what happens. To me, there's so much more of me that nothing has to take the brunt of it.
Nice. I brought this little book with me, Meditation for Kids, which I didn't read for the kids today. But one of the descriptions of meditation in the book is life in the vast lane. Yes.
I think mindfulness helps me to catch myself off course more quickly than otherwise I would have been able to do. And I've been noticing lately that I'm not as punitive when I'm off course, that I say, well, now, is that really how you want to feel and think and act and so forth? And I kind of ease myself back. So and that hasn't come about. Certainly, I've heard it suggested that you've suggested not to beat yourself up, and I've read that a lot. But I think that just comes out naturally more than through teaching.
Nice.
That the mindfulness, maybe it's the spaciousness that happens from it.
Nice, thank you.
Get into a moment in my mind where I get attached to an idea or a thought, and where I become so absorbed into it that I lose track of my outside world and of my own processes. And when I catch that and I watch that, sometimes it just disappears, and I'm back to the moment.
Mm-hmm. Thank
takes
you.
A lot of work.
Thank you.
Finding that I can't be mindful enough. I can pay attention for moments at a time, or in a certain subjects. But I feel as I, the more I practice, the farther behind I fall.
Because your standards get higher, or? The Zen master Dogen has this quote where he says, it goes something like, those who are deluded think that they're enough. They're enough as they are, something like that. And those who are enlightened, I don't have it right. I should get it. Maybe next week I'll bring it. But it's something like those who are deluded, think that things are just in a sense perfect the way they are. Those who are enlightened realize it's never quite right. It's something like that. But maybe I'll remember next week to bring it. Dogen says it a lot better.
I think comes with some of the problems of perception. We're the observed. We can observe certain behaviors of ourselves. We cannot always observe the effect of our behavior on people or surroundings.
Uh-huh. Oh, I see.
But there are human limitations. And what is in the gap between what we can attempt to do and what we might see as a fulfilled end? And I think it may be a kind of faith in there that is not entirely rational.
It just reminds me, one of the basic teachings of Buddhism is something like, the nature of our experience of the world is unsatisfactory, is suffering. and that the clarity that comes from mindfulness practice doesn't take that away from you. In some sense, it makes it more acute. And the freedom that comes from mindfulness practice is not a freedom that makes that go away, but actually is a freedom that strengthens that perception in a sense.
I think that gradually I'm experiencing a kind of acceptance of the level of physical suffering that I have to go through all the time. On a really subtle shift, said that instead of sort of thinking, well, if only this weren't here, then, you know, because I can perceive more that, you know, one suffering is as good as another, one distraction is as good as another, and there would be something else that I would suffer about if I was, you know, so that even though I still have to deal with that particular suffering and a lot of physical pain, it's without that one extra burden of sort of trying to push it away and inventing this imaginary other space that I could work from. And that's very subtle, but it's also very powerful in terms of everyday living.
It's fantastic. Thank you. The rest of you giving a Zen answer? Yes.
I feel as though I have a different relationship to my neurosis.
And how has mindfulness helped with that? And how does, and again, how does mindfulness, how did mindfulness bring you to that kind of patience or hope?
I think being able to watch the pattern of things and sort of being able to watch my own drama and realizing that it was my drama, and if I could close the curtains, you know, it would settle down so I didn't have to play into it.
Great, thank you. Yes?
One of the things that's really helped me in is to slow down enough to really honor my child, my little 2.5-year-old. Before I started, I was always feeling I needed to rush and be, you know, kind of, let's go to the market, let's do this. And I find now I can sometimes. I'm able to sort of see myself doing all of that striving, and then, you know, I don't really need to go now. I can go in 15 minutes and spend 5 minutes looking at this crayon, or, you know, spend 20 minutes going down the driveway. And that could be so much better at that than I am, just to be able to open to the things that he's just naturally better at, like being there in the moment.
Great, you have your own little mindfulness teacher.
I'd like to check on the difference between awareness and mindfulness. My sense of it is that awareness is the energy that allows you to look at the details that mindfulness brings up. Is there a difference between awareness and mindfulness?
I could give you my answer, but this is not the time for me to be answering. This is the time for you to tell me what you know about it.
That's my perception.
Great. I think it's great. Remember, you're supposed to become your own authority. Yes.
Mindfulness helps me to stay in the present and focus on things so I can make better decisions, and so my mind is not so scattered, since I'm not doing that for long, but it helps me a lot.
Great. Thank you. In the back.
I think the big thing for me that I see is that it enables me to not simply react to people and situations, but instead it gives me the space in there to look at, is what I want to do, is it just part of my reactive process, or is it something that's useful to the situation and useful to the other person?
It
gives me that extra
room. Great. Thank you. And Jonathan?
Mindfulness for me used to be almost like seeing different facets of my personality and being able to say that a negative facet was no more me than a positive one. And now I feel like it's discovering that behind all those facets there is something which is more core to me, which is actually far more pleasant than I'd expected. But I'm working towards that.
Great, thank you.
Just a brief addition. One reason I may feel that if I am inadequate to it is that sometimes I find I have to turn it off in order to perform, to get on with it, to do something. If I'm to be in a receptive and an active state at the same time, is sometimes difficult for me, and I will turn it off in order to do, to create or make something. Mm. It's odd.
But just as mindfulness enables me to see how I'm, someone was mentioning here, how I come from my own space of mood or reactiveness. When I see that in me, as I begin to see that my moods are mine, I also can give other people theirs, so that someone can really behave in just extraordinary, obnoxious ways. And I find I just don't take it personally anymore at all. It just doesn't bother me. I really see it as, okay, that's really is that person's thing right now. And I have really a whole lot of compassion for it, because it's a yucky place to be. And I guess no one has ever been bad enough to me that I've really been hurt by it. I'm just talking about the levels of rudeness and blindness out of desires and passions and self-interest that I know all too well myself. And mindfulness has certainly made life easier in that respect.
Mindfulness for me is related to the idea of non-attainment. I try not to think of mindfulness as a tool to improve on this situation, to allow me to work better in the situation, to gain something from the situation, because that always brings up the who is being mindful and why. And then I think maybe this mindfulness is a way of helping somebody. Who is that somebody, and what might they require? So I think this non-attainment idea is not that there's any kind of right mindfulness or wrong mindfulness. Mindfulness is like a touch, and that touch is kind of an influence, but it may not matter that something right next to that thing that's touched is not touched. So my mindfulness tries to include the thing I'm not mindful of, and that way nothing gets left out.
Nice. Very nice.
Did seem to touch on something that I was wondering. I mean, it seemed as though people were saying pretty much everything. No need to add. But then I thought, but what indeed would wrong mindfulness be? And that idea of attainment seemed as though, I mean, it seems as though mindfulness can give power to manipulate a situation. Not necessarily for the common good, or not necessarily, certainly not necessarily in a goalless way. Perhaps that's wrong mindfulness.
Very interesting observation. I think a very good one. Wrong mindfulness and right mindfulness. Non-attaining mindfulness, all-inclusive mindfulness, spacious mindfulness, patience mindfulness, self-acceptance mindfulness. What other versions are there? Compassionate mindfulness.
Childlike
mindfulness. That's nice. Say more.
For me, my mindfulness practice has opened up the door of wonder to things that were mundane and everyday. Have brought a thrill to seeing sunrise,
so,
or seeing sunrise, or tomorrow. Anticipating the joy of seeds as they begin to sprout before they go into the garden. And even the simple things as just the touch of a cold doorknob as you open up. And through that process of finding wonder in all of these small and simple and everyday things, what I've noticed begin to happen is more awareness of intention, more awareness of the beginning of an idea to do something. And in that process of recognizing it in those small and simple, mundane, everyday occurrences, some of the larger, more emotional impedances or traps or knots in myself or neuroses have opened up in ways where I've had more awareness of the beginnings of intentions to fall within certain traps and to see things that would otherwise have been rather subconscious
open themselves up to a lot more awareness through that process of understanding how intention becomes our action.
Great, thank you. Yes?
I think I should, well, whatever it is, mindfulness, I suppose we'll call it. But for me, how I used to operate is, and I shared this with another sitting group that I sit with, is that how I used to operate would be that I would just, in relationships that I would have, like if I was going to the grocery store, going to get gas, or whatever, that I would just try to bang through these things, you know, and not have any kind of relationship with the person taking the money. Even if it was just, hello, how are you, here's my $15, thank you. You know, because that might be the last relationship I have, but yet I'm waiting to reserve my specialness for me seeing you, because that's more important. And so, in being more mindful of each relationship that I have with each person, as if it might be the last relationship I have that day or forever, it kind of makes it a little bit nicer, where I can smile at that person and, you know, and greet that person with some level of integrity, whether I know them or not, or whether I have a full-on, you know, relationship that I might have with my brother or my significant relationships with other people. So, it's interesting what happens, you know, and they actually, these people that I shared my space with and they share with me, actually might have a brighter experience because of taking an extra minute to have eye contact with them and to share something that otherwise might not have meaning because they were insignificant. And that was kind of arrogant. For me, I think it was an arrogant posture to put people that I come into contact with on some kind of a level of, or a strata. And that's really changed my life because I've had different things happen because I've taken a little extra step. And things that I never would have suspected. You know, because I was conscientious enough to extend myself to what may otherwise be my last talk with someone. And that's shifted my reality day, each day. And it's made my life, and hopefully people I come in contact with, a tad bit fuller.
Maybe it's contagious.
I don't know. It's kind of nice. You know, it's nice to smile, give me a grump, you know, and that's okay. I mean, sometimes I'm not in the most chipper of moods. And I just feel a little bit different than being arrogant and thinking that my relationships are just reserved for only me.
How many of you found that opportunities have opened up for you because you're mindful that you wouldn't have noticed if you hadn't been? So what else about mindfulness? Yes?
One important aspect for me has been body mindfulness, and it's helped me a lot to recognize like muscle tension and the way I'm breathing, and it's made me more aware of the present moment to see that. It brings me back into the present. So it's connecting me with my body, and not just sometimes I go through the day just in my head so much.
Great, thank you. Very important. So mindfulness of the body, or the body's mindfulness. Yes, Pesha.
In the same vein, when I practice mindfulness,
I try to ask myself as often as I can in the day, what's really going on? And check in with what I'm feeling in the body, because if I just keep it in my head, I feel like, oh, everything's fine. Everything's neutral. But when I check in the body with tension, you know, where is there tension, then, oh, wait a minute, there's something going on here. And I can go one level or two deeper. So what am I really experiencing now? And sometimes it's very uncomfortable, this discovery. And I say, well, I'll have to deal with that later. But I'm glad I became aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, particularly when I'm running a drama like fear or anger, to stop and say, what's really going on here? Generally then, when I realize what's going on, I have to laugh. I'm behaving like a child, again, a scared child, or, you know, something like that. And, oh, there I am, I'm doing that again. And it diffuses the situation.
That's lovely. That's nice. My favorite quote of the year so far is the one that says, it's a blessing to be able to laugh at yourself, because then you'll never stop being amused. Yes?
I guess a lot of things people have said have really rung bells within me. But one thing also that has, and I'm not quite sure what the connection with mindfulness is, but something that it's the acceptance of the fact that things in my life or things in this world are not going to be all right, and that I can't fix them. That there are a lot of things that are wrong and hurtful that can't be that I can't fix. And it's this acceptance that's given, coming with it, is a somehow a sort of a faith that it will work itself out in ways that I don't understand. And I'm not, I guess it's the acceptance part of mindfulness that has made that easier for me, but it's been very, very important. It's been important in my teaching, and it's been important in my personal relationships that I teach environmental problems, and it's a very depressing subject. And it really helps to be able to try and convey that feeling that, well, this is the way it is. And it's really hard for the young people, too, because they're going to have to deal with it for more years than I am. So it's helped me to have an attitude, I think, about not being able to fix things and still having faith that it'll work out in the best way, whatever.
Great, thank you.
I've spent a lot of energy for the last few years trying to figure out what big changes to make in my life and what I need to do and what would make me happy. And of course I haven't figured it out. And then I really feel like the last couple of years I've gotten a sort of faith that, I mean, I still think about that a lot, but that isn't going to be the answer, and that just doing this practice is much more useful than worrying about what I'm going to do. So even though I still worry about it, I just really, somewhere deep inside me, I feel much more calm that's, it really doesn't matter if I figure out these things, but just doing this is...
You're pretty good, thank you. They're very nice.
Mary Orr has used a phrase, mindfulness is the best mother. that works for me. That sticks with my experience.
Uh-huh.
For a long time I've been aware of having this inner observer, but it's been a kind of a critical, judgmental inner observer. And so now, in doing this practice, I'm finding that, you know, the inner observer is there, but it's becoming so much more sometimes just matter of fact in observing myself, but sometimes, you know, much more compassionate, acceptance, tolerance, and so I don't, I can depend more on myself and not so much on looking for that good parent, you know, out there somewhere.
Must be a relief. Are you being mindful now? So, it was actually very nice for me personally to hear all your comments and to hear the meaning and value and the understandings that you have with the mindfulness practice. I've said this before, that there's whenever a group of people speak, there's often more collective wisdom in the group than there isn't any one person. And so it's nice to hear sometimes from everyone. And in coming down here today, I was reminded or remembered that in the Theravada tradition, in Sri Lanka especially, and also in Burma and in Thailand, that the sutra, the Buddhist scripture, that gives the instruction for mindfulness practice, the scripture in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, treated devotionally by the people in those countries. So there are people who feel a tremendous amount of love or devotion, faith, inspiration, happiness, awe, in the field of mindfulness, in the world that is revealed when we're mindful. And your comment about the awe, you know, just the mundane world. I was sitting having dinner by myself, which is somewhat unusual because my wife is usually home, but she's not home. So I was sitting dinner by myself and just at a table and just silent. And I was amazed by the color and the shape and the breakfast cereal boxes. Wow! No, they were too far away for that. Just the color and I guess Madison Avenue would love us to become more mindful. Not too much though. Just, but not distracted. Not distracted, but yeah. From their point of view, too many of us have mute buttons, inner mute buttons or whatever. So the sutra, the scripture, is enchanted as a devotional chant, as an inspirational chant, as a chant of, you know, whatever, for what all the various reasons people chant religious chants. But it's chanted, and people kind of pour out their devotion to the practice, to mindfulness, to wakefulness, to acceptance, to openness, to spaciousness. And to have a channel, I mean, they can actually come tremendous gratitude and joy from this. And there are times for me where I feel that mindfulness and love are synonymous. I can't say that all the time, so I wouldn't want to define mindfulness through love. But there are times in my own practice, in my own kind of being alive, that they seem to be synonymous in those moments, in those times. I remember once in Burma, in my on retreat there, just being overwhelmed by the feelings of love and gratitude, and you're supposed to go and have interviews, and, you know, every day with a teacher and say what's going on primarily. I didn't want to tell him that, because it seemed outside the scope of what he wanted to hear, which is maybe a little bit of a pity. But it was actually very important for me, this outpouring, or I don't know if outpouring, but outpouring and inpouring, and, you know, this ocean of love. And certainly the opportunity we give ourselves by maybe slowing down, it's not necessarily the same thing as slowing down, the opportunity we give ourselves to pay attention to the present moment opens up a whole world of things which are really beautiful that we would never be possible if we're not in the present moment for it. And I think love is a primary example. You can't love in the abstract. You can't love, you know, I guess, I don't know, maybe you can a little bit, but you know, if you're thinking about planning the day and what you're going to do the rest of the day, you're not going to have much time for love. Or if you're kind of remembering what happened yesterday and regretting it or upset, there's not much room for love. I think love really flowers when we really find ourselves in the present moment. And so this is the feeling of the tradition of having devotional attitude towards the mindfulness practice. To me, you know, it's something I feel and makes a lot of sense to me. And bordered on kind of expression of awe that you felt that comes with the practice. But you know, I think that for me it's actually much stronger at times, the feeling of mindfulness connecting me to kind of a spiritual sense of reality of life, or and love is a good word for it. Maybe. One of the things that went through my mind listening to some of you talk, I loved everything you said. I don't want to in any kind of way detract from anything anybody said. But one of the things that went through my mind is that, and actually it was after Judah spoke, just to kind of put a time and a place on it. Judah said, you know, maybe it's not always appropriate to be mindful in some situations. And that's a whole topic in itself. But when she said that, I was reminded that traditionally in Buddhism, the point of mindfulness is to be free. And I often say, you know, the point of mindfulness is to be mindful, and if you're caught up in attainment, that's problematic. However, I think it's also that's true, all that, but it's also I think. Maybe useful to point out that the point of mindfulness is to become free, and if you're free, you don't have to be mindful so much. And maybe if you're free, you'll be mindful kind of automatically. But the point is to be free and to be able to love freely and honestly and be kind of intimate with friends and people and the world and everything, and without resistance, without holding on, without ambition or desire or hate, and. And that doesn't require us to always be trying to be mindful all the time. Because once we're free, you know, it's like the story of the raft, right, in Buddhism. The Buddha likened his teachings to a raft. And if you use a raft to go across the river, the Buddha asked, if you find a raft and take the raft across the other river, and then you continue walking down the forest path, and you start carrying the raft with you, is that foolish, oh monks, he said? And the monk said, oh, it's very foolish. So the same thing with Buddhism, or maybe even mindfulness to some extent, is that if you're carrying it along with you too much, or you know, as something you're doing and actively involved and engaged in, at some point it just gets in the way. And at some point we don't necessarily lose our mindfulness, but we're not carrying it along anymore. Carrying our back as a tool or as a raft to get us anywhere. So,
there's always another river.
That's the problem. That's the thing about, you know, so this Buddhism has this great teaching, you know, that Buddhism is just a raft, and you get across, just kind of dump the raft, and dump Buddhism, you don't need it anymore. However, there's always another river. But hopefully there's another raft there waiting for you. Or maybe you learn to swim.
Or you've learned to build it faster.
So I hope that it was as interesting and as inspiring for you to listen to all of you speak as it was for me. And talking about right mindfulness. And next week we'll talk about right concentration, which is a good topic. Then we'll get into it. Ah. Yes?
My incipient comment shows it took me a long time to formulate. May spill over to next week. Just as a preliminary, I find that
with mindfulness comes the freedom to focus on whatever is needed to be focused on. And I find that really a liberation.
I think beautiful. And that's a little bit what, like what Bud said, I think. Bud defined mindfulness more or less like, you know, being present enough and then awareness focusing at the details. Is that right, Bud?
Well, it's kind of the other way around.
Oh. these words are very flexible. The point is what you're doing, not the word. So whatever word you put on it, keep doing it. So, thank you all very much.